Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show? Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having a great day. The Doug Gottlieb Show comes to you live from sunny Southern California. I saw this, by the way, real credit card questions require real people, someone who understands your issues and works to resolve them with you. That's why Discover offers helpful U.S.-based representatives available 24/7. Discover, exceptionally common sense. Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama, and as of now, Cincinnati. That's the top four for the college football playoff. Of course, we still have several weeks to have this stuff, really 2 weeks to have this stuff play out. Okay, Georgia and Alabama are on a collision course. They will play next weekend. Of course, both have rivalry games this week against inferior opponents. Ohio State and Michigan play this weekend, plus the winner plays for a Big Ten championship. Oklahoma State is ranked seventh, plays Oklahoma, who has, 13th or so? Plays Oklahoma this week, and then if they win, they play Baylor next week. If they lose, they play Oklahoma again next week. But the point is more that there's still games to be played. Notre Dame, Cincinnati has, the Conference USA championship game against Houston upcoming. So here's my, can I tell you what I'm rooting for? And it hasn't happened yet. But at some, there's going to be a year when it happens, and why the hell can't it be this year? Right? I don't necessarily like chaos in life. Like, I think some people are disruptors merely for the purpose of being a disruptor. But I do like the idea of chaos in this, in that it makes it even more impossible. What's likely to happen is Ohio State beats Michigan, and then they beat Wisconsin. They go to the college football playoff. And Alabama, you know, it's much more likely that Alabama beats Georgia, and then they both have one loss, and then they play in the national semifinals, and then Cincinnati would have to beat Houston. But there is a very much a world where Cincinnati loses to Houston, Alabama loses this week, and then beats Georgia. Why does that matter? Because then Alabama would have two losses, and then what do you do? Michigan beats Ohio State, then loses to Wisconsin, or vice versa. Loses to Wisconsin. Oklahoma State beats Oklahoma, who's ranked 10th, and then loses to Baylor. Right, that's the ultimate chaos. Everybody's got a couple of losses, and you're trying to figure out what's what. That's kind of what I think that's what most people root for, is complete and utter chaos. I do think it's interesting that the Cincinnati win over Notre Dame is massive. And Notre Dame's win over Wisconsin looks even better. The problem with Notre Dame is they have no conference championship game. You know, they're not in the ACC conference championship game this year as they were last year. So they can't fix anything, right? They can't, not that playing the ACC for an ACC championship would fix it this year, but they can't fix anything. Oklahoma State is that rare team that actually has an opportunity here to take down two top 10 foes in the last week. And that would be amazing. Do people realize how one-sided, lopsided the Oklahoma State rivalry is? Oklahoma is 90-18-7 against Oklahoma State. 90. That's crazy. Let's talk a little bit about this Thanksgiving dinner thing. Did you see what Dr. Pepper has out there now, Jason Stewart? You know, they have chocolate Dr. Pepper.
That doesn't sound great.
Have you ever had a chocolate Coke or a chocolate Dr. Pepper?
No, in fact, I kind of want to keep my chocolate as food.
Wait, what?
I want to keep my chocolate as food.
So you never had a chocolate flavored drink?
I mean, chocolate milk doesn't do anything for me. You know, chocolate Yeah, I need to keep it to ice cream and brownies and stuff like that.
Ramos, you ever had a chocolate Coke? Sonic, you can go get a chocolate Coke, chocolate Dr. Pepper. You have one?
I don't believe so, but I wouldn't mind trying it.
I can only tell you it's pretty amazing.
Okay, so you've had it and you know it's delicious.
Oh, it's amazing.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't had it out of a can. I haven't had a can version.
Yeah, I mean, I'll drink any. I mean, I love root beer, vanilla, Coke, all that type of stuff. I'll try them all.
Yeah, I will try. And look, I'm not a soda guy, but I mean, like that thing pops up, and I'm like, I might have to try that bad boy. Right? Don't I?
It just seems like Dr. Pepper is such a unique flavor. It works on its own. I know they have the cherry. I just don't need Dr. Pepper to be blended with anything. It's so good onto itself.
Yeah, but you can have vanilla Dr. Pepper. That's good. Chocolate Dr. Pepper is good. Like, I understand what you're saying. You're saying it's like ice cream and spaghetti, right? Who doesn't like spaghetti? Who doesn't like ice cream? You don't need to mix ice cream and spaghetti together.
Kinda, yeah. I mean, I like cherry Coke and things, you know, with the Coke. But Dr. Pepper is just like, man, that just kicks ass on its own.
But why can't you kick ass even more if you add Coke to it? if you have chocolate to it.
You're saying there's degrees of kicking ass?
Yeah. 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 Like Houston in basketball, have you guys seen this score? This is crazy. Houston was up 51-19 on Oregon.
I thought it was a misprint. I asked John, I'm like, is that right?
Now it's 63-39. It's still bad, not as bad. UConn kicking the crap out of Auburn 64-50 as well. There's some blowouts here early in what should be a good day of hoops. But it's fun to watch. So there's different levels of an ass whooping, right? Like you can kick somebody's ass and then you end up it's 10 on the scoreboard. You can kick somebody's ass and it's 40 on the scoreboard. Right? That changes a lot. Changes a lot. So you guys, no go on the chocolate Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, I'll pass.
You know what's funny about all this discussion with Matt Judon saying basically macaroni and cheese is crap is what we used to do in college was when I was at Oklahoma State, the late Patsy Sutton, she'd come to one of our practices the week before Thanksgiving, and you'd have like a piece of paper on your locker, and it was, you know, write down your favorite dish from home for Thanksgiving, and then write down like your mom or whoever's number so that if they didn't know how to make it, they could call and get the recipe. That was a big thing. Big thing. And
considerate too. I mean, when you think about it, to take the time to say, I mean, I think that would make me feel, if I was on the team, very special.
No, it did. It was a great idea, and it really kind of helped us. You know, it kind of helped a lot of guys who weren't be going home for Thanksgiving, and it made you feel, you know, plus you're going to a country club we'd go to the country club for dinner, but they would have, the chefs would have everybody's recipe. And then, you know, when I was at Notre Dame, we each had an assistant coach's house we went to Terry Tyler's house and all the young guys, and we ate, and then we just passed out on his floor watching football. And then we had a practice later on that day, which was the two practices on Thanksgiving is a very normal, and the second practice is almost always a waste of time. Because you got that tryptophan, it kicks in. Now, Ramos, you guys eat early or do you eat like for dinner?
I think Suzanne's mom is going to be doing it like noonish, 1 o'clock. So I guess that'd be early, right? Not like 5 o'clock would be normal. My family tends to do it more, my immediate family, like my brothers and sisters, they tended to do it more like at 4 o'clock, 3 or 4 o'clock. So.
Okay. I like that. What about you, Jason Stewart? Do you do early or do late?
I mean, growing up, the tradition was always, I guess, late afternoon, right? You know, and over the years, when you work in this business, you work a lot of Thanksgivings. And so, like, I think it's always been kind of catered around me as an adult. But I always think it's the perfect time is like 4 o'clock. Like, you know, right towards the end of the Cowboys game and before the night game. That's a nice pocket to hit right there.
I like 1 or 2 o'clock. I like 1 or 2 o'clock when you eat, and that way you can come back later on, like 7 or 8 o'clock, you're like, you know what? I'm going to get in on some of that ham. I went too strong with the turkey. Now I can go and I can, you know, kind of you know what it's like? Thanksgiving dinner sometimes is a lot like a Will Ferrell movie, where the second time through, it's even better than the first time through. Now you really get to appreciate all the humor, right? Now you get to appreciate all the food. Your portion size, because you know how it goes. Like when you see all this food and you smell it, it's been cooking all day. You're just salivating at it. Salivating. Right? And you're like, God, is that ready yet? Like, well, the pies are all ready and the sides are all ready. We got to wait for the turkey to be ready.
It's really an exercise in the human condition, in that, you know, it takes a really like disciplined eater to not overeat on Thanksgiving. There's just so much good food. Pacing yourself, you're right. Maybe not going so aggressive in that 2 o'clock meal so that you have a great experience later in the night. That's a good strategy.
Yeah. You just overplate, right? You're like, oh, I want that. I want that. I want that. You look at your plate like, oh my gosh, what is going on here? You overplate and you overeat and then you're like, oh my God. Then you take a tryptophan nap. But then, you know, it's got a little bit like Chinese food. Like at some point you're going to get hungry again. And you're like, okay, that was really good. Now the second time through, I can truly appreciate everything that's going in and, you know, going into this deal. Everything. Menu tomorrow. We're going to smoke a turkey. I do like some green stuff. Like I think you need the balance of it. Like I'm going to make a bunch of spinach. I really like sauteed spinach with a good amount of like kind of some thick salt. With it, it's delicious, and the texture is so different than everything else. We got dressing that's going to end up as stuffing, right? Dressing is stuffing, not inside the turkey. We'll put some inside there as well. I like the canned cranberry sauce. I know you can do fresh cranberries, you can work all that hard, but guess what? Nobody eats that crap. You get the canned one that's still like jiggling and still got the mark from the side of the aluminum, and it just works for me. Works for me. We'll do some mashed potatoes, maybe a little sweet potato casserole. I don't know if we'll do rolls. I'm not really a bread guy.
Yeah.
No need for rolls. And then a good amount of dessert. My mom makes a rhubarb pie she loves. It's good. You know, it all depends on the amount of sugar. I told you guys I'm not a huge sugar guy, but I'm trying to negotiate for a sweet potato pie to be made at some point.
Was there anything like that you didn't like younger when you were
Like
for me, it's cranberry. I never touched cranberry sauce growing up through all the years with Thanksgiving. The last 4 or 5, I've just put it on my plate. Like I love it now.
My mom has always made this homemade cranberry sauce. I never touched it as a kid. She swore by it. She'd work all day on it. It has like real orange stuff in it, whatever. I'm sure like if you like that kind of thing, it's incredible. I found it to be disgusting. And so finally I just like, look, don't make it. Nobody's going to eat it. And we don't want to make you feel bad, right? Nobody's going to eat it. Like, get the canned stuff. It's way easier, and I actually like it. And then, yes. And probably if I ate the cranberry sauce the way I eat the canned cranberry sauce, is fine. Because I don't eat it by, like, nobody's just like, hey, give me a pull of that cranberry sauce. I'm just going to dig in with a spoon like it's some soup. But you add it to the stuffing dressing. You add it to the stuffing dressing, mashed potatoes, turkey. You take one big bite, and now all of a sudden it all works together.
That's correct.
Guys, hungry yet? I'm starved. I am cheering for the just like I like my food all mushed together because it's all going same place. I'm hoping that these football games we get the same sort of chaos. I want everybody to lose twice. I want it to be complete. Like you can't tell anything. It never seems to work out that way, but that's what I'm rooting for. Gonzaga smoked UCLA last night. Tell you what I saw.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. So we had 1-2 in college hoops, men's and women's. I think what's most surprising is, Gonzaga took on a UCLA team that brought just about everybody back from last year's team that played Gonzaga to a last second buzzer shot, which they lost Jalen Suggs, obviously. And Suggs being gone led you to believe, okay, maybe. And I thought, you know, like you have these veterans, all these guys back. They've been through the wars. They've seen the tough games. They'd be ready. They were not ready. They were down 20 points at the half. The game, I think the closest they got was within 16, and that was about that. And I'll tell you the thing that kind of impressed me most. Obviously, Andrew Nembhard is a guy getting a ton of respect today. He's a junior point guard. He started his first year at Florida and then transferred to Gonzaga, and he's a senior. He played his first 2 years at Florida. And that's a guy who he was a star on the Canadian junior national team. And last year he was the other guard with Jalen Suggs, or one of the other guards with Jalen Suggs. Now he gets to take over the throne. I would say that, like, look, there's just an element to it where, one, older players do succeed. Timmy's only a junior. Nembhard's a senior. Rasile Bolton's a two-time transfer. He's a junior. You need older guys. But there's also this, like, UCLA has tried, you know, to upgrade over Tiger Campbell for a couple of years. And he's a tough kid and a good player, but he just does not have the ceiling of some of these other guys. And that showed itself. But man, the Chet Holmgren thing is something to watch. You know, something to watch. He only plays 28 minutes. He has 15 points, but a couple of just wow plays. And even though so far he's not shooting the three all that well, he hit a couple last night and leads you to believe, like, he's going to make them. And he didn't do much of anything against Texas when they played that game, but he was good last night. So here's the question that I think a lot of people are asking. You'll see him against Duke, against Paolo Banchero, who's the other, like, those two, and then Imani Bates. Those are the guys that are going to go in the top three. They're all playing college basketball. Bates plays for Memphis. Banchero plays for Duke. And Holmgren plays for Gonzaga. But Banchero's like 250 pounds. He looks like a ready-made product. This kid is 7 feet, 195. And so the question becomes, like, okay, eventually he's going to get up to 215, 220. Can his body hold up to the weight? Can he keep the weight on? And what does his game look like when he eventually puts on that weight? Like, he's incredibly thin, but incredibly talented. But everybody just says, like, well, you know, he'll mature, he'll go and add pounds. That doesn't always work. It's a lot like the Zion Williamson, he'll lose weight. Hasn't worked. Does he add the right weight? Does it affect his game? It is easier to put on weight than it is to lose and keep weight off. But man, is he skinny. Yes, John Ramos.
I was telling this to Jason. This past weekend, it was either last weekend, number 4 ranked team in the nation, Ohio State, beat the number 7th ranked team in the nation, Michigan State. What was it, 56-7, something like that. So I look at it as they are 2 or 3 behind the number 4 team, right? So that's close. Last night, the number 1 team in the nation, as of today, beats the number 2 team in the nation by 20 points. Shouldn't it be closer than that? Is it just too early in the season to compare 1 and 2? I mean, I can't imagine a 2 team or a team that's 7 and 4 being manhandled and just disintegrated by that many points by a team that technically, according to all the polls, is only 1 or 2 ahead of you or in back of you. That just seems a little odd to me. Are the polls not right? Or is it just too early to rank teams? Are we just throwing teams at a dart? What's going on? I don't understand how teams so close to each other can just be so really that much apart from each other.
Well, I think some teams are. And like the UCLA guys would have told you, like, we feel like we're overrated. It's hard to tell, though. It is hard to tell. Like, for Gonzaga, like, you think on paper, like, Drew Timmy's back, he's awesome. Chet Holmgren's up, he's awesome. Nembhard's back, like, he's good. Like, okay, you add a couple of pieces, like, how's it actually going to look? Now, you saw them against Texas, and they dominated a Texas team. But, like, Texas, they got a bunch of pieces together. They'll be better at the end of the year. UCLA, like, look, the truth about UCLA is, as well as they played at the end of last season, remember, they were in the first 4. That's the thing everybody seems to have forgotten. Like, they were not a dominant team last year. They became a very good team and played very good basketball. But they were by no means a dominant team. They kind of had to sneak their way in the NCAA tournament a little bit. But we only remember the tournament. You know? They went into the tournament with 9 losses. They were 17-9 going into the NCAA tournament. They lost their last four games, last three regular season games, and their first game of the Pac-12 tournament. They actually lost six of their last 10 games before the NCAA tournament, and then they reeled off five straight wins. So, including the first four, was an overtime win against Michigan State. It wasn't very good last year. So, I think part of it is, John, we don't remember what teams really were like. We only remember what somebody did in the NCAA tournament. It's like Oregon State's really struggled this year. Like, well, Oregon State was a Sweet 16. Like, they were bad. They wouldn't have gotten the NCAA tournament last year. They not won the Pac-12 tournament. And they won a couple games and made a little noise. But that has nothing to do with how good they actually were. So I think Gonzaga really was that good. UCLA was not and played above their level. And I still think UCLA's good and didn't play well and didn't match up. And it's early in the year and they kind of got mollywomped. But I think a lot of it is we just, it's the last thing we see last year, especially in the NCAA tournament, that formulates our opinion. And that's incredibly unfair because it's a new team, it's a new year, but we also didn't watch the entire season last year. Let's dig in with my man Mark Rogers, who joins us from Oklahoma City as we're getting ready for Bedlam. And Mark and I have, you go back to, man, that was like 20 years ago we started co-hosting a radio show in Oklahoma City that you're still hosting in the middle of the day on WWLS. So how many, over the last 20 years, what's it, four wins for Oklahoma State? Is that am I counting right?
Yeah, I think you're counting right. Five times Cowboys favored in 50 years.
Wow. I don't know if people have a healthy appreciation for just how dominant Oklahoma is in this. Maybe they do. And I guess, and you and I talked about this on your show. Do we think it's in the heads of an Oklahoma State team? Many of these kids didn't grow up in the state. Some of them played elsewhere previously and transferred in. Do we think it's in their head?
There's a couple of those games in which, you know, Oklahoma State was favored to win. If you go back to the 2013 game, it's almost improbable how Oklahoma won that game. They kind of uglied it up. It was more of less of a rock fight, but Oklahoma State was a 10-point favorite in that game. And I think, yeah, that may have affected the Cowboys some there. But some of the Oklahoma State wins, you know, 2001, you go back to that game, they were 27-point underdog, and Oklahoma was still in the national championship hunt there. Then, you know, we all know about kicking it twice to Tyreek Hill in 2014 when OU had the game won. Oklahoma State gets to overtime on that punt return and then wins that game. But it's a pretty lopsided history, and I think it's very valid to just ask, will the history play a factor in the game Saturday night? Because I think that if you look at these two teams play all season long, Oklahoma State's gotten better and better and better, and Oklahoma still, they just really haven't found it.
Okay, so why for Oklahoma? Why have they not found it?
I think there's a combination of things, and some of it you see in the pros against, say, the Chiefs and Pat Mahomes and the Rams and Matt Stafford. Teams are playing high safeties against them. They're dropping a bunch of guys into coverage that they're telling their front four, hey, beat these guys in the pass rush and we'll take care of the rest. And Lincoln Riley has been kind of slow to adjust in the Baylor game. He gave up on the run. The Iowa State game last week, he focused more on running the football, and I think it really, really helped them. But they are taking an epic step up in class against this Oklahoma State defense this week.
Yeah, you mentioned they chose to run the football, but it's also a different dynamic in that he doesn't have a quarterback. He has a quarterback who is a freshman as well. So as talented as Caleb Williams is, he hasn't seen a ton, right? He hasn't seen kind of exotic looks. Do you think that's part of what Lincoln is kind of struggling with? Because he's seen as an offensive guru, but they've looked anything like that so far this year.
I think Lincoln is, you know, he's a great coach. He's taken a little bit of heat this year. But if you look at the years of Mayfield, Murray, and Hurts, I mean, anybody would have a chance to be an offensive guru with those guys. So it has been a little regression of the offense. Caleb Williams' numbers on the road look very different than his numbers at home. And so I think that's a task for Lincoln Riley. He learned some last week against Iowa State by, okay, we have to run the football. We can't give up on it the way we did before. And I think he's also learned in those two road starts for Caleb Williams is maybe we need to take some things off his plate. He's not Jalen Hurts. He doesn't have that kind of experience. And so some design scheme run game for the quarterback where he's really a difference maker, Doug. I mean, he doesn't look like he's as thick as he is, but he's really difficult to tackle. He can shed guys, and then he can also run away from them. He's a difference maker in the running game.
Yeah, I agree with that. Okay, what about Oklahoma State? You know, part of it, what's interesting is they actually have experience at the quarterback position, okay, with Spencer Sanders, but, you know, he's injured to start the year. He's had turnover issues in the past. But now their offense seems to actually have improved. Like, it was a weakness to start the year, and now I don't know if it's a strength, but it's more kind of neutral. What about Oklahoma State on the offensive side of the ball?
Well, you know, he came from Denton, Ryan, and just a powerhouse, played for his dad there. And I think he was expected to be kind of a transitional quarterback at Oklahoma State, where he's going to be really, really good. And it just didn't happen that way. And I think this year, in that Boise State game, third game of the year for Oklahoma State, they'd really struggled in the first two. And Mike Gundy, I think, changed his philosophy with the football team of, we're going to run the ball. I think they ran it 56 times at Boise. And we'll take the responsibility out of Spencer Sanders' hands, and we'll establish that ground game and then let him play off of that rather than the quarterback trying to make plays on his own. And, man, that created an identity that has been fantastic for them. They're really good at running the football. It's very conservative. And as a result, in the last few games, I think last three, he's played well, under control, made some throws when he needs to, hasn't tried to do too much. And with that defense and that complementary football, OSU is really good.
Yeah. Okay, so for people who aren't familiar at all with this, right? Like, it's almost a comedy of errors. Right? What was it? It was 88 when Mike Gundy was the coach that Oklahoma State had a wide receiver who literally dropped the game-winning touchdown pass wide open in the end zone, correct?
That's Brent Parker. He's coaching my high school now.
No way.
Yes, that's a true story. So I have a small school, grew up in northern Oklahoma, and he's the head coach there. But yeah, that was a crucial drop in that 88 game with Barry Sanders.
But that's kind of like the story of this rivalry is generally Oklahoma has been a dominant team, but there's also just been things that go bump in the night, and, you know, OU fans call it Sooner Magic. But that's really kind of the story of this thing, which is even when Oklahoma State is as good or better on a day, they find a way to lose instead of finding a way to win.
Well, there was a game, and I believe it was the 1990 game. Pat Jones, who's a colleague of ours, Oklahoma's getting ready to go into the locker room and call a timeout. Pat brings him back out on the field, and Oklahoma hits a Hail Mary from Cale Gundy to Adrian Cooper to get a touchdown, in which they were ready to go into the locker room. So, yeah, there's been things happen. 1983, there's a great story about Oklahoma. Coach Switzer decided not to onside kick. He tells the rest of the kickoff team except the kicker, who, you know, hits a screamer right at Chris Rockins, and it bounces off his helmet, and Oklahoma gets it and goes in and scores. So it's been a hotly contested rivalry, as you know, but Oklahoma's had a lot more of the success on the gridiron.
Yeah, no, it's been pretty crazy. Okay, if Oklahoma State beats Oklahoma, Baylor doesn't get upset. They play Baylor. Hey, if they lose, these two teams play each other next week, right? So
yes.
How does that kind of cast a shadow on this game?
Well, I don't know. I think for OU, again, it's maybe not as much pressure on Oklahoma State. It does help OSU that they don't play OU back-to-back weeks, because Baylor, if they win, they're going to keep moving up in the rankings, and they're ahead of Oklahoma now, so it gives them a better win. People aren't talking enough about OSU being in the college football playoff. I don't think Notre Dame's resume compares to theirs at all. If OSU has one more win in the Big 12 conference championship game and their conference champions, and with these good wins that they've had coming down the stretch here. So if the Cowboys win two more games, Doug, they're going to be playing in this playoff.
Yeah, no, I agree. Because everybody, you know, almost everybody else is going to lose, and they'll have added two wins. Okay, so for people who are, again, not familiar, like, how surprising would it be that this Oklahoma State team would be playing potentially for a national championship?
I think it's pretty surprising. And Mike Gundy should also be getting a lot of discussion for the Coach of the Year in college football because of the changes that he made this year. This defense is incredibly experienced. They're old. They've got a great mix of some young, talented guys with a bunch of players that have seen a lot of action. I think Malcolm Rodriguez, he really got screwed on this Butkus Award. He's one of the top linebackers in the country, and he didn't get mentioned on there. So I think that, you know, they've kind of snuck up on us. They weren't considered, I think, 26 in the preseason poll, but we overlook how potentially good this defense can be. And I think other times in the past, we thought OSU might have a good defense and kind of been surprised when they gave up a ton of points or yards in a couple of games. But this defense hasn't shown any sign of that yet.
Who do you think wins?
I think Oklahoma State wins. The 84 game in Norman was a game between number two versus number three. That was another tremendous Oklahoma State defense, and that was the score in that game. Oklahoma won 24-14. So I'm going to give you a little throwback to that score. And it's been a long time since I thought there'd be less than 40 points scored in this Bedlam series.
Do you think they play again when Oklahoma goes to the SEC?
I don't think Oklahoma will play that game. I expect the SEC to add another conference game, and so I just think that maybe there's a bone thrown out there, like, okay, we'll schedule a game for 8 or 9 years down the road. But even Mike Gundy said it this week; he doesn't expect it. He doesn't expect the game to be played. So this is one to savor. I think they probably have one more year in the Big 12, but it's not guaranteed. So we might not have many more of these.
That's crazy, right? They played every year since 1904, and now they wouldn't play?
It is crazy. It really is. And I know other schools in the SEC play a traditional rival outside of the conference, but OU better be careful, I'm telling you, because they've struggled in games this season. If they were in the SEC West this year, I mean, every week you'd be flipping a coin.
You and I have talked about this. Like, I think, you know, if you're Lincoln, I wouldn't go to LSU, but I consider USC, just the idea of, like, people don't, no matter how good the league is, nobody's going to react well if you had five losses by your name. You'd be like, well, we played, like, don't care. Like, we're used to you not having, like, one loss, two loss, max. They just, I don't know if they care. And I don't think they have the built-in recruiting advantages in that league they do in the Big 12. Like, I think it's likelihood Lincoln leaves.
I think it's very small. I think all this, the LSU talk is just, it's really ridiculous to me. I mean, that's a bunch of guys, I think, trying to get clicks and message board subscriptions talking about $12 million a year. I think that's fiction. If he would leave, I would say that a really, really good NFL job might appeal to him. USC probably would appeal a little bit more than LSU, but I would say that he's 95% at Oklahoma. Maybe
you had Bob Stoops on your show today.
Yeah.
Florida is open. Heck, USC is open. He's an Ohio guy. And, of course, Mike Bone came from Cincinnati. Do you think Bob Stoops coaches college football again?
I don't. Bob did tell me last week, and this is off the air, he just said USC would have been a job that would have really appealed to him if it ever would have been open or up for grabs. Just kind of likes Los Angeles and likes the tradition and history of the ability to recruit in California. But yeah, it's crazy that he gets his name thrown out there all the time for all these jobs. And no, he is enjoying doing what he does for Fox. I think that the show has taken a different step forward this year in the Big Noon Kickoff. Those guys are great on there. They've got a really good chemistry. And no, he's enjoying
that.
You just said
he'd like the USC job. The USC job is open. So why wouldn't he be up for the USC job?
No. Listen, 40-year-old Bob Stoops, yes. But I don't think Bob at this age is 61. I don't think he's interested in getting back in there, and all of the demand. I think that's the reason why he left Oklahoma. Everybody was searching for these reasons, and, oh, well, he can't just be ready to retire. And I think that's it. I think he's enjoying life too much. There's no pressure on him. Does kind of whatever he wants to do. I think he loves his analyst role because he gets to keep in the game. But I don't see him going back and being under all that pressure and scrutiny as an older guy. I just think that that's not ever going to happen.
No question. Everybody knows that, certainly. Okay.
No question. Nope.
Mark, we'll talk soon, dude. Thanks for joining us.
All right. See you, Doug.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're doing well, enjoying the Thanksgiving preparation, preparing the bird, or if you're driving, wherever you're driving. By the way, you know what? Here's what you should do. You should hit us up on Twitter or Instagram, at Gottlieb Show. You're driving, listening to the show. This is the old Steve Zabin, who's a friend. He has his own show, obviously. I know in Milwaukee. Zabe did always, when he did national radio, where you headed, what you hauling, right? you don't have to go where you had where you what you're hauling, but I'm interested. Where are you going? You listen to the show. Hope you're enjoying it. We do this every day. You can also download the podcast version of it. And then we have the All Ball podcast. So the Doug Gottlieb Show, you can download podcasts, listen to past interviews and shows, or All Ball podcast with Doug Gottlieb. That's available. Or you just listen to us every day on Fox Sports Radio, your Fox Sports Radio affiliate, SiriusXM 217 and 203. Check out the latest lines from World of Sports, Bet River Sportsbook. Bet Rivers is the trusted name in online sports betting. You got to be 21, present in Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, or Pennsylvania to play. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. One thing we do every day is we try and figure out what interesting was said on Fox Sports Radio or Fox Sports 1 and bring it back to you. We call it...
And now...
What does the Fox say? Brady Quinn's on a show early in the morning. It's called Two Pros and a Cup of Joe. He had this to say about Cincinnati in the college football playoff rankings.
This is 2 years in the making. You know, last year went undefeated in the regular season, lost to Georgia in the bowl game, but kind of, I think, built up equity within the college football playoff committee. Now, once again, undefeated and a chance now, a chance to play for a national championship. The big question becomes this. Is the committee going to look at their schedule the rest of the way? Now, they got to play East Carolina this week, but in the AAC championship game, they've got to play Houston. That's a a top 25 team. That's a good football team. That's going to be a challenge for them. That'll be a lot closer, tighter game. But with those two games ahead, is that enough for them to solidify their spot at number four? Here's what the College Football Playoff Committee signaled to some other teams out there. By moving Ohio State up to two, I think why they did that was they don't want to have Alabama in. If they don't win the SEC... All right, if they don't beat Georgia, if they don't beat Auburn this week, they're not going to be a part of the playoff. There's that theory that if they would lose a close game to Georgia in the SEC championship game, with two losses, Alabama might still make it in. That ain't happening, all right? The College Football Playoff Committee is not going to allow a two-loss team to make it in. So they're signaling to Cincinnati, hey, you take care of business, you're in. First time ever, congratulations. That's all you got to do. Win out and you're in.
Yeah, I don't think it has anything to do with they don't want Alabama in. Just Alabama didn't look great. That's really what it was. They just didn't look great this past week. And when you don't look great and you're trying to make a case that these close games are just more a product of being Alabama, I don't think that sits well with people. So I actually don't buy that. I think it's just a case of Alabama has not been as dominant as the presumption is that they should be, and that's why they have been leapfrogged, whereas Ohio State was incredibly impressive last week. But all that's week to week, and that can change.
What does the Fox say?
I don't have time for what Colin Cowherd said. I still think it's interesting. Okay, next hour, I got my Thanksgiving Day picks. Okay, I got some thoughts for you on the Lakers, as they dropped another one last night, although they didn't have LeBron. And wait to hear what Kevin Garnett had to say about LeBron James. But coming up next, Daniel Jeremiah is going to join us. What does he think of the Giants offense, especially now that they fired the offense coordinator? Is Daniel Jones just not good enough? What about the Baker Mayfield situation? What about the Seahawks situation? We'll get to all that. Top of the hour, plus preview the Thanksgiving Day games next. The Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio.